Go-To Food Podcast brought to you by Deli. Deli's an incredible food platform from the team behind Depop that sells the best independent food and drinks products in the world that other shops don't really know about, but now they do because we're promoting them on this wonderful podcast. So head to www.deli.market.
How many L's?
Two L's.
Yep.
And discover the thousands of creative products dropping daily and use the code GO2DELI for 25% off everything from us. Now today we're delighted to be joined by Michelin star chef Tom Brown, who runs Pearly Queen in Shoreditch and until recently the Michelin starred Cornerstone in Hackney. Firstly, Tom, why did you decide to shut up shop? And why are we losing so many Michelin star places? I mean, one of six to close this year in the country.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? I mean, the short answer is finances.
As in on your end or the public's
end? Yeah, well,
or
both.
Probably,
yeah. I mean, yeah, they're sort of, they go hand in hand. I think, you know, people are having a rough time out there, you know, operators and customers. And it's the first thing that goes, isn't it? Like, you know, if you need to cut back, you're not going to eat out. I mean, I was getting a tattoo done the other day, believe it or not. I've got a lot. and I was chatting to them and they were like, oh yeah, we're feeling it. And it's things that are disposable income. So, you know what I mean? And also we were looking at it the other day with, because we were talking about sort of with Pearly, how that's doing and stuff. And I think people have an amount of money they're going to go out with and they want to extract the most value from that money. Do you know what I mean? So a Michelin star thing is... It becomes occasional.
Like, you know, it's almost criminal. You're doing seven courses for 45 quid. Right,
trust me.
I mean,
believe me, I know.
It feels criminal. I mean, I'm loving it as a punter.
It's eight courses actually for 45.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so, come on. Yeah. No, it's, you know, we just work it the right way with the menu. And at the end of the day, I mean, the whole point with Pearly was to do something that was affordable and inclusive. Because I think a lot of those restaurants that are sort of seafood based or like oyster places, they are seen as like high end. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the location of all the big ones, you know, I don't want to name them because I don't want to seem like I'm having a go at them.
Have
I'm
a
not.
Go.
Have I love them. No, I love them. I love them all. I think they're great places, but they're not, you know, they're all in West London. They're all sort of central and west.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, is considered a more money area. We're on Commercial Street, you know what I mean, in Shoreditch. So we wanted it to be something that was more affordable, more inclusive. So yeah, we want to keep the prices. I mean, believe me, when the accountants are moaning at me about the GP and I'm like, I'm trying to get it from both sides.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like the GP's low, but it's like, well, I want to keep the prices down. So we have to find the middle ground. And I mean, as long, you know, in the very sort of media trend, as long as the customers are happy, I'm
then like, who is a favourite and start opening on Sundays, what you tell
them? I'm going to.
Really?
There
believe
we go.
Me. Yeah,
what
we're
you
going
do?
To. Well, look, we opened it at first on a Sunday and there was two reasons why we closed. Number one, I hate working Sundays.
So yeah,
I was like, no, I want to watch the football. I want to go out on a Saturday night. But number two is it wasn't very busy when we first opened. And the reason was, I think we had a look at it and I think what it was is we were just doing our normal menu, which is great. But what do you want on a Sunday? You want more comfort food. You want, you know, you're up against pubs and roasts, right? And be honest, oysters aren't going to win that battle on a Sunday. Like, I wouldn't want to go out and eat oysters.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
like a plate of oysters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wouldn't. But so we were looking at it and we're going to do this Sunday brunch offering.
Go on.
So yeah, so we're going to like do our version of like some classic sort of brunch dishes. We're going to do like Bloody Mary oysters. We're going to do like a crab McMuffin. So
Whoa.
Obviously, you know, the old sausage and egg McMuffin.
Yeah.
We're doing that, but we're going to make like a fish sausage with loads of crab for it. It's delicious.
Oh.
Sriracha mayo, American cheese, fried eggs.
Oh.
Oyster Benedict we're going to do. So like crispy fried oysters, creamed leeks, champagne, hollandaise,
oh.
beans on toast, but like the beans will be like a cuttlefish kind of stew.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it's just things, I think they sound better than on a Sunday plate of oysters, you rolled out of fabric at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want that. No one wants that. I don't want that.
Well, at least you're going to deep fry them.
So yeah, we're going to deep fry them. But yeah, back to Stone with it closing, you know, it was doing all right financially. We were kind of staying afloat, but we'd kind of outgrown the area in a way. And not that we were, you know, we're not bigger than the area as such, but what it's sort of evolved into with like James, who was the head chef, who's unbelievably talented chef, had like taken it to a place that sort of wasn't right for the area anymore.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So it was, could it like reappear?
Yeah, well, I'd love to do it again. I mean, it's mad. It was such a hard decision to close because it was such a huge part of me. Do you know what I mean? It was like... It's like losing a family member, genuinely. Like, and it was such a massive concern. I had like this sort of existential crisis because it's like, you know, it sounds stupid, but like so many people that sort of half know me are like Chef Tom Brown. It's like, well, why am I Chef Tom Brown? It's because I've got corners there. So it's like, who am I now? Do you know what I mean? In this massive, like, metaphysical sort of philosophical life question. Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, I'd love to do it again. I'd love to take what we were doing there and maybe even, you know, push it even further. And but it's just, it's finding the right setting.
What about moving back to the homeland? And by homeland, I mean Cornwall. I mean, it should be its own country. Traditionally, it was.
Mate.
But I mean, the produce, have you ever been down to the Duchy Grub? That's an amazing little place.
I haven't been there. I was actually back in Cornwall last week. Funnily enough, I was doing Rock Oyster Festival. And it was real. Good. Yeah, cheers. Yeah. It was really fun. I stayed at the hotel where I used to work, St. Enadoc, and like, went and ate at Nave's place, which is obviously amazing. Went and ate at the Mariners, Paul Ainsworth's pub, which is absolutely unreal. Yeah, like, good. So good. And you know, you get a bit nostalgic, but I think I prefer living in London and visiting Cornwall as home, because I think London's more me. Like, going back in Cornwall sometimes, going back in a fucking time machine. Yeah, no. Do you know what I mean? Like, I went in, it's funny, I went the week before, I went down to like down where my mum lives, and it was the Euros final, and I rang up some old mates from school, and they were like, oh yeah, we're gonna go to Ilugan, which is a big up Ilugan, the village I grew up in. We're all gonna go to the football club there and watch the final. I was like, all right, I'll come along. I'm not joking. It was literally like a fucking school reunion. Like, I knew everyone that was there. And it was like, all nothing the people, changed. Nothing had changed. Yeah. Nothing had changed. And like, that's great when you're visiting.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't want that for my life.
No.
So, yeah, do you know what I mean?
You'd have to start 100%. Battling Rick Stein for like supremacy.
I reckon I'd take him, to be honest.
Yeah, you take him down.
Like, yeah, I think, he's great, Rick.
I love fish and chips overrated in Padstow though, yes or no?
No, I think his fish and chips are good. I used to work in a place in Falmouth that was called, it's not there now, it's called the Seafood Bar. It was above his fish and chip shop in Falmouth. And I mean, it was great, man. Like, go down, just was eating so much fish. He's got a lot to answer for in terms of my cholesterol, but like, it was fine. No, it was really good. I love Rick. And Jack, his son's really sound as well. So,
yeah,
so I got nothing but love for them.
You created some of the most viral and now copied recipes ever at the Cornerstone Kitchen. Yeah. We've obviously heard the new menu at Pearly for the brunch, but talk us through how the shrimp crumpet Hate Kiev in particular came about, and what do you make of the restaurant? Because you know, sometimes you see the classic dishes like trotter a la Pierre Kaufman, and people still write a la Pierre Kaufman, whereas they weren't giving you any credit. I mean, do you get fucked off about that?
People ask that, and number one, I think I'll be honest, right? Let's take the crumpet and let's take the Kiev. The crumpet is something that I basically nicked off someone I used to work with called Paul Ripley. He's an amazing guy. We used to do potted shrimps and serve them with crumpets. So I was like, let's just put it on top. And that's literally it. That's the level of innovation.
And apparently the crumpets in the pub in Cornwall, where you used to hand them out to locals, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So it was amazing. We had it was a 13th century pub. Like, it was mad. It was built because there was a church next door being built and it was for the workers.
Nice.
And it's just been there ever since. It's a beautiful place, St. Kew. The St. Kew Inn, if anyone's down that way.
Yeah.
It's amazing, well worth a check out. He'd put like a packet of like Warburtons next to the fire, and there was like this antique sort of toasting fork. So you'd be there, you'd go in and just toast a crumpet and eat it.
That's unbelievable. Idea, that is the sweetest thing I've ever heard.
Like, and honestly, it gets sweeter.
Yeah.
So in the winter, he had like an antique chestnut roaster, and he just put a big sack of chestnuts. So you just sit there. I mean...
Do you really?
Know what I mean? It's very
just come and help
it's
yourself.
Very Charles Dickens, isn't it?
Yeah, amazing.
But yeah, so that was how the crumpet came about. And
so a la Paul Ripley,
yeah, a la geese. We used to call them geese, so yeah, crumpet a la geese.
Crumpet a la geese.
There's some connotations with that, but if you know the guy, then do you know what I mean? But so that was that one. And the Hate Kiev was actually one of the commies that he was a commie at the time. He left as a junior SEAL, Alex Parker, who's called. He's a really, really nice guy. Works at Harvard Arms now, really good chef. And he one day he came to me and went, "Should we do a monkfish Kiev?" And I was like, "Well, monkfish is too expensive. Let's try a hake one." And that's it. Essentially, neither of them are my idea.
Okay,
but yeah, I see a lot of them coming up, and like, you know, it is. You can see. I mean, I get people. I literally had a lad yesterday message me. He's doing a Kiev, and he was like, "Oh, what's the cooking time and that?" And people get really protective about it, but like for me, I don't give a fuck. Like, I'd rather.
Was that just a guy at home? Or was that someone in a restaurant he's putting on a menu?
Yeah, a chef somewhere. Yeah. And he was like, "Oh, you know, how do you make it stick together and what's the cooking time and that?" And like, I don't see the point in getting defensive about it, because like, everyone's ready to recipe book, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah.
If no one did, like, what?
Yeah.
I just think everything like that, it just breeds good food, doesn't it? Like, yeah. It's like anything, isn't it? It's like, I was watching a thing the other day. It was like this thing. It was a comedian called Jamali Maddox, and he was talking about immigration. He goes, I've been to countries where there's no immigration and the food's just shit. And it's like, that's what it would be yeah, like yeah. if chefs didn't, like, give out their recipes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All you do is you just get nothing being as good. And
out,
like,
of interest. How do you make it stick together? Because I had a look on your... I cooked for you today. I haven't made that.
I mean, I don't tell anyone.
No, and I looked at it and I was like, I don't know if I can make that work.
It's honestly, like, people are like, oh, is it meat glue? Is it this? Is it that? Do you steam it?
Also, the filling. Are you, like, do you freeze it?
Here we go. Right, so let's use this. So this is my piece of hake, yeah?
Yeah.
So we're going to cut... You cut through there.
Yeah.
And you open it up like a book. Because we did try it like a, you know, like a chicken.
Yeah.
Where you do it and you pipe it in. Yeah. You don't get enough butter. Like, you need a 50% ratio.
A lot of butter.
Yeah, so it's like the Kievs, the fish weighs at 100 grams and the butter weighs at 50. Do you know what I mean?
Nice.
So, yeah, we don't
cross
that. So, butterfly it. You brine the fish first. Sorry, not brine it. Dry salt it first.
Yeah.
For about 10, 15 minutes. Open them up. Big block of butter. The butter's... You want it stone cold, like frozen, so that when it wraps over it, like, it's really hard and it sticks to it.
Yeah, right.
And then the salting of the fish just seems to make it real sticky.
Great.
So it just, you wrap it real tight. You push them in a container so they're all sort of pressed, and it just holds tight. And then a double panne, and that's it. There's nothing.
There you go.
I'm not a clever chef. Do you know what I mean? I don't know lots of things. Like, one of my best pals is a guy called Tom Spenceley, who's the head chef at the Ledbury's. Obviously, just won 3 stars.
Yeah.
And he starts talking about food, and I'm like, mate,
no idea.
I don't know what the fuck. I don't know half of what he's on about. And I'm like, no, shut up. I'm like,
I agree. Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, totally, man, totally. But no, I mean, I would say I'm more of a cook. I'd say I'm a really, really good cook.
But Pearly Queen's incredibly innovative. You know, you're not serving classic fish dishes. If you go down there, you're not going to get, like, a side of fish and chips or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Like, you guys are pushing boundaries. Can you talk us through a couple of your, like, crazy dishes? I saw the cuttlefish lasagna there and oyster pate.
Yeah, cuttlefish lasagna is really good. It's really nice. I'm so, like, anal with things. And if they're not, it really frustrates me with minor inconsistencies.
Yeah.
So if something doesn't go out exactly the same... Or it's a hard one to, like, plate and make look, right, not like prissy and all this, but, like, if it can't look the same when it goes out, it stresses me out. So we played around with that for a while, and we did it this way and that. And it was the same actually with the crumpets in the end. Like, when we were doing the shrimp crumpet, that was annoying me so much. And it was like, the only reason we wouldn't take it off the menu is because everyone was asking for
it. Yeah.
So we were like, right, we've got to find something that's way better. And then we had to do the same with the lasagna. It was like, I can't remember what it was that we got to replace it in the end, but just, it's so delicious, but it's more of like a dish that you would do. I've done it for, like, functions and things since, do you know what I mean? Because you could do a big tray of it and scoop it out, and it works really well for that. But in a restaurant setting, to do a portion or whatever, it doesn't lend itself to that, I don't think. But it was really nice. And that was just because... I really like lasagna. Like, lasagna's my favourite dinner.
But if we go today, like, what are the good, like, things we should be getting?
What are the good things? So,
I mean, it's all good.
The buffalo oysters are really, really nice.
They look naughty.
They're delicious. That's sort of become a thing for us.
Is it annoying when it becomes a thing?
It becomes annoying when it's a thing, when you think that everything else has gone past it. So the crumpet was one like that as well. So we had it on for, God knows, like, fucking 2 years or whatever at Cornerstone. And everything else on the menu was, like, better than it. Yeah. And I was just like, people were just coming here to put it on their Instagram and that, and it just felt like it wasn't as good. But
what about the buffalo oysters? Like,
Buffalo oysters, they're just really nice. Like, they're inspired from, I went to Inisir, and he did, like, a fried sweetbread with, like, ranch and caviar. And then I was like, ooh, so we'd do that. So we thought we'd do buffalo oysters, dress them in the buffalo sauce, and then the ranch sauce. And, like, again, it's really just about making food just nice. Like, I live opposite Wingstop, so I'm going to get the tenders with a buffalo and a ranch. It's just like, it's nice. I think so many people just, they put the forefront of their mind, chefs, it needs to be clever, or it needs to be innovative, or it needs to be this, or it needs to be that. It's just got to be fucking nice, isn't it? It's just got to be delicious.
Out of interest, Tom, in Wingstop, often you get two styles. Yeah. So buffalo's your one. What's your other one?
Original buffalo and ranch.
Yeah, nice.
That's it. Yeah, I go all the same.
You do, yeah.
I'm really I'm really plain with food.
Yeah.
When I go out and like, if I just buy normal food, I went to Everyman last night at cinema to watch Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah.
And I got my ice cream and it's like the Sunday, innit? It's build your own Sunday. So they're like, oh, what do you want? I was like, 2 scoops of vanilla, 1 salt of caramel, caramel sauce, no toppings. It's like the most boring thing. She looked at me. She was like, you're allowed toppings.
Yeah. So what
like,
you want.
No, I just want plain. I'm plain Jane.
Ben, just out of interest, what sauces do you go for, Wingsup?
Well, I go original, the buffalo one, and then there's like a dry one.
Really?
I need to look it up.
I'm straight.
Chat away and I'll bring it up on here.
I'm Buffalo Ranch, that's it.
Well, talking about all these incredible dishes, obviously you come up with some wonderful, wonderful creations, and we're now going to get you to come up with one for Delhi. We're going to show you a mystery bag. This is a game we call Delhi Steady Cook, as Ben looks for his dry ranch. But come on, Ben, what do you have in your bag today for Chef Tom Brown?
I've got two, I haven't got two bags at all.
No.
I'm going to go with...
God, I'm getting flashbacks here. Mystery bag, I haven't got the bag.
Yeah. Who's got the bag?
Yeah, exactly.
I've given you 50 quid. Who's got the bag?
Here we go.
Right, Tom, here's your bag. I'm going to pull... to be quite honest, I can't remember what's in here.
Okay, here we go.
So you got some sauerkraut.
Nice, right, sauerkraut.
You want to put that on the table, Freddy?
Yeah. Sauerkraut, okay.
You got Mama da Costa XO sauce.
Nice, which is really good. Yeah, she's amazing. So I've had that before. Really, really good.
This is called laser sauce, fermented chilies.
The laser, nice.
From milk, right. I think, which I think is in Balham, right?
Great. Oh yeah, milk.
You got a lot of chili based stuff here.
Nice.
You got Poon's chili vinegar.
Great.
Which is unbelievable.
Chili vinegar, nice. Yeah.
Just give that a little shake, and then you've got some ramen noodles.
Okay. Sound.
And you can bring some other stuff to the party.
Okay, so
and
can
you
I
don't have to do anything yet.
Right. We're gonna find out at the end of the pod.
Okay. Oh, I need to have a think now then, yeah?
Yeah,
have a little think throughout the podcast.
Pop that
right,
up there,
great. I've got one. Can I do several dishes?
Yeah. Do what you want.
Ideal. Great.
It's a sort of a stitch up of a bag, but...
I'm there.
There's a lot of chili going on, so it's going to be good.
I'm happy.
Well, we'll find out at the end of the pod. Ben?
Can I do it now?
I've
got something.
Yeah, go on then, do it now.
Okay, so first thing, can I bring fish into it?
Yeah, please. It's almost essential that you do it.
So I would do, we've done like these cuttlefish, I feel like the amount of times I've said cuttlefish on this podcast is the most anyone ever has. We can check that out. I would go cuttlefish noodles. So with the ramen, so we used to do it at Cornerstone with, it's like cuttlefish cacio e pepe. Mm. So you get the cuttlefish, layer it all up in like a big sort of block, freeze it and shave them thin. It comes like tagliatelle or noodles.
I think Joe like can knit that off you.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just saying.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I nicked it off Pierre Kaufman, so there's
okay,
that.
Okay, everyone.
And then I'll get the ramen noodles, blanch them with the cuttlefish and just dress them up in the XO. So it's like XO noodles.
Absolutely delicious.
Ideal. And then, and a bit of the vinegar on that as well would be so nice. And then I would make a salmon. Well, we do like the trout pastrami. Ooh. So I do a Reuben. So pastrami. Ooh. Pastrami, kraut, pickles, and then I would use the fermented one to give it like the Russian, when you do the Russian dressing in it, get it real spicy with that.
Let's have a drink. I kept it simple.
Let's do go-to drinks. What do we have on offer?
I just thought we could have a Guinness.
Nice.
Is that all right?
Sounds good to me, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm there.
So we're going to have a Guinness, and as we do, we're going to ask you, Tom, what is your go-to cocktail?
Go-to cocktail?
Yeah.
It's an old-fashioned.
Yeah.
Every time.
Every single time.
I love an old-fashioned. I do like, really like a martini as well.
Yeah.
Actually.
Do you have anything special?
Vodka martini with a twist.
Yeah.
Love that. But yeah, for me, it's an old-fashioned. I like
great way to start the night.
Yeah, exactly. I love whiskey.
Yeah.
So, really good old fashioned always for me.
Do you enjoy a Guinness as well, Hed?
I fucking love a Guinness.
Good, man.
Especially, I'm like a Guinness purist these days as well, because when I've been over to where we buy the oysters from in Carlingford, I've been over there and it's like the best.
Jesus. Sorry, we got some explosions. Yeah, sorry, Kara.
Carlingford is like the best place in the world. Like, it's so nice. Like, the most beautiful little bay, and like Kian and Mary who own the oyster farm, and Kian's dad Peter as well. He's fucking mental, by the way. He's like absolute mad. He's so funny. He goes out windsurfing every day. He's like 90, but he's an absolute legend. He's a legend. But yeah, so we go there, and I stayed over with him, and like they're the most hospitable people in the world. Like, they can't do enough for you. Look at that.
Is that good?
It looks decent. Considering it's out of can and that, yeah.
It's in the back of a podcast studio.
I know.
So what do you make of the Devonshire then?
I love the Devonshire. Yeah. I went there the other day, actually. I went for dinner for the first time. Look, the Devonshire don't need me to sit here wanking it off, because everyone loves the Devonshire. Everyone knows about it. But I'll tell you what was good about it was, number one, it was the first time I ate. It's absolutely delicious. I went, it was me and Brad Carter, his chef, he's like my best mate. Our birthdays are 2 days apart.
Nice.
So we had a little joint birthday dinner upstairs on the terrace.
Mm.
I didn't even know they had a terrace.
No, not many do.
Mate, it's amazing. It's brilliant. It's amazing. And I was up there and I was having a little bit of a detox because I'd been to Glastonbury 1 week, and the week after I came back, it was a Cornerstone close down party. Oh, and I felt like I'd probably done about 3 years worth of partying in that time. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah, trust me.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was on a detox, and I had a zero Guinness.
They're all right.
Free. It was no different.
Yeah, yeah.
It was amazing. Sorry to anyone who's listening.
Good food.
From really, really, really good. Just really solid cooking. Yeah. Delicious. And it's like, yeah, Brad's just closed Carter's not that long ago.
Mm.
And so we're kind of in a very similar sort of boat at the minute. Yeah. Like, you know, had a Michelin star place that we just closed. You know, he's about to open Undercroft, which would be amazing, but this, you know, it's a far cry from the Michelin focus. It's similar in a similar way to like how Pearly is. It's a bit more relaxed, a bit more fun, a bit
he's
more
he's a Brummie, right?
Brummie.
Yeah,
big Brummie.
We're seeing him soon,
aren't
we,
Ben?
Oh yeah, we are. Yeah.
He's great. Yeah, he's my favourite person.
Quickly, it came to my head. Like, when you close Cornerstone, it gets in all the papers.
Yeah.
You then have people jumping into your DMs. It's a bit like 4 a.m, suddenly you've got girls jumping into your DMs, but this time it's like investors saying, like, let's go again.
Yeah.
Let's keep it going. Yeah, right.
Yeah, you do. And I was like, I remember at the time I was thinking, where were you this money when I could
have it? Yeah, when I actually needed it, yeah.
Well, but cheers,
no, cheers, everyone. Yeah, slonger, as they say.
Slonger.
But yeah, so... Yeah, we went there and the food was really good. And going back to Carlingford, yeah, so when we were there, Kian's got this like pump set up in the oyster thing. He comes over, he's like, would you like an oyster? I'm like, probably.
Yeah.
So he opens one and then he goes, do you want a Guinness? So he pours you a Guinness. The Guinness is there. And then he goes, and as soon as you finish your oyster, he opens another one. And he goes, I've got this nice wine. Do you want some wine? I went, all right, I'll have a glass of wine. Thinking, oh, it'd be after Guinness. The wine's there. You have your Guinness. Another oyster, he goes, do have this thing. Also, this is a good thing for anyone to try. He goes, have this thing we do over here with the gin. I went, fucking hell, go on then. What is this? It's like 10 a.m. So with the oyster, you know, some people, you normally just knock it back. Well, if you lift it out with a fork, so you leave all the juice in, and then you just bring it back up to the top of the shell with the neat gin and drink that like a chaser.
Oh.
So we're just doing this, and then when the Guinness is halfway, he's pouring you another.
Yeah, quite right.
But it's like the best Guinness in the world. Like, you know, it's so true, the thing when they say, like, when you're in Ireland, the Guinness is better. Like,
that could be something for your brunch menu.
Well, we've been looking at a way to do it, because we had these oysters that were like green tomato and jalapeno sort of hot sauce, which is like, my brother lives in America. No, he doesn't. He lives in Mexico, so don't get them too confused.
No.
Me. Sorry, Trump.
Sorry,
Donald. He lives in Mexico. He's married to a Mexican girl, and it's her mum's recipe for you know, when you go, I don't know if you've been to Mexico, but everywhere there's the tomatillo dressing every table. It's her recipe for that.
Ugh.
So we did that. So we were doing it, I was doing it with tequila, but sort of a little off menu thing, like, because we'd be serving people behind the bar. And I'd be like, do you want a bit of this? And like, just top it up with tequila, but I need to work out a way where we can charge for it.
It's
really nice.
Yeah,
it's really nice. We do shots with we do like Gilders at the minute. So we've got like pastrami, like Gandia chilies, and then like the Prello olives.
Yeah.
And we do that with martini shots, is real nice.
Oh.
But the oyster thing's like next level. We just need to work out how to do it. But
Make sure you start charging for it.
Yeah.
I know, I mean, yeah, who'd have thought I'd have closed a restaurant? Fucking dishing out free tequila around the club.
So Freddie and I coming round to yours. I've read somewhere that you don't really cook at home.
Nah.
You clearly cook in a restaurant.
No.
But what if we're coming round, what are you giving us, little pre-dinner snack, and what are we drinking?
What, like something homemade? Or what?
Whatever you want.
I actually do.
Just genuinely.
I'll just get a load of nuts out.
Yeah, nice.
Load of nuts and olives. But no, I think, if I was going all out, I'd just go and get a load of like cured meats.
Yeah.
Because for me, that's the best thing. Like that's the reason why we've started doing fish charcuterie. Because when I go out, I want charcuterie at the start of the menu. Because I think it's just the way to set you up. Oysters, oysters or charcuterie.
Perfect.
Oysters, charcuterie or olives. Like if you don't, they're the
Holy
three.
Trinity. Yeah.
That's what you want, innit? Like there's
that's
a reason why things to, yeah, fucking nice. Yeah. Mate, my thing as well, anchovies. I love a good anchovy. My go-to hangover food is, I live above M&S in Dalston, is I'll go downstairs, get a big crusty French. I've got these like fluff, like these padded North Face slippers, a big dirty hoodie and some shorts. I'll go down like that, like Shaun of the Dead, get a baguette, some really nice butter. They do this like nice French butter.
Yeah, prisoner.
Something like that. And then some Ortiz. And I just sit there and watch like...
Just work through the baguette.
Put Lord of the Rings on. And just literally, but yeah, don't even slice the baguette. I like ripped baguette. Yeah,
cold butter, anchovy,
and mop up. Unbelievable. So yeah, we'd have the anchovies out. We'd have some cured meat. We'd have some olives, and some bread.
What are you drinking with that hangover cure? Like if you
probably
were
going to more alcohol.
Yeah, usually. Well, no, but obviously, but I mean, what
whiskey? Yeah, I'll just go straight and eat whiskey. Man.
So you've got bread, anchovies, butter, and there's a little bottle of whiskey on the go.
I think if it's like a dinner thing, I do like for sort of a pre-dinner, I'd go probably more like a Negroni or something, or like a Aperol Spritz or something like that.
It's always like Aperol Spritz. Brings you back from the dead.
It brings you back.
Do you know what I mean?
Do you know what I think is with Aperol Spritz is mad is the fact that it's so nice in hot and cold extreme weather.
Yeah,
like,
very true.
Do you know what I mean? Like you have it when you're skiing or you have it on the beach.
Yeah, it's perfect. Both situations.
Yeah, they've really nailed the marketing on that, yeah.
Growing up in Cornwall, you're surrounded by incredible produce, but you weren't that bothered by food growing up, I mean, or were you? I mean, what were your sort of food memories? I read that it wasn't...
No, not a lot. The most time when we used to cook was my uncle lived in Birmingham. He was a surgeon, lived in Birmingham. So on our summer holidays, it's mad, isn't it? We grew up in Cornwall and our summer holidays, we'd go to Birmingham.
Go up to Birmingham, you know what I mean? Lovely.
Which is mad. So we'd go up for 2 weeks and we'd spend time with Uncle Hamish. And he was like a very keen gardener. Him and his wife were vegetarian, so we cook a lot of like vegetarian food up there with stuff from the garden and that, which was really good. That was sort of the most time when I remember really cooking, other than I'd go fishing with my dad quite a lot, and we'd often cook the fish that we caught. Like I remember cooking mackerel when we were young. One thing that's sort of a real kind of core memory is we used to catch rays quite a lot. You know, like it was like skate, like the flat ones. Yeah, we catch like thornback rays sometimes. I remember... dad showing us how you prep them, you know, cut the wings off and like they got really tough skin, like pour the boiling kettle over it to pull that back and then just like run them through milk and flour and fry them in butter and stuff. Yeah, and it was like dad's thing was like on a ray, it's got like big sort of quills of a feather that are the bones, and at the end they go super crispy. His thing was like that was his favorite bit.
Yeah,
so you want to make sure that you fry it loads, plenty of flour so it goes crispy, and like fry it loads and then break it off and eat it. So yeah, we tried doing a snack for I should revisit it actually. We were going to do like a bar snack with it at Cornerstone ages ago, where we like dehydrated them and deep fried them, you know, like to get it out. They do it in Asian
yeah, I was gonna
with
say,
this
yeah.
crispy bones, like sardine
so good.
Bones and,
yeah.
and bones and stuff. And we were trying to do that and do it as like with like salt and vinegar, make it like crisps, you know what I mean? Like salt and vinegar crisp with like the malt vinegar powder.
Let's have a look about that again.
But our supplier would only send us those frills with the skin on, and then it doesn't work with the skin.
No.
So we need to like maybe look at it ourselves.
What about pasties? I mean, were they actually a thing, or are they just like a bit of a, you know, do Cornish people actually eat pasties, or is that?
Fucking right.
Really?
Yeah, they're so good, man. Like we were down in, like I said, Rock Festival. Other than there was some chefs in who were doing like the sort of the bougie tents next to us whose food was amazing. But the best thing that I had was the pasties.
What's your classic?
Classic, yeah. Although I did have a really nice cheese and vegetable one.
I like cheese and onion.
Cheese and onion pasties are good.
What's the classic then for those listening?
Skirt steak, has to be skirt, potato, onion and swede. Although in Cornwall you call it turnip. Which is somewhat confusing.
Right, but it's swede.
It's swede, yeah. And my mum always used to say there was like a way that you cut it off, like rather than like dicing it, it was like you have like a knife and like pull it back to your thumb. You know when you turn a potato or something? It was like that, but you break off little bits so it's not like diced with the swede. It was
nice.
A weird sort of way. Yeah, you don't want it too thick. It's got to be lard in the pastry as well. It's got to be real flaky with the lard. But yeah, no, pasties are
a real thing.
Pasty. Yeah.
You mentioned mackerel there. We had a guest the other day who said it's the most overused item on the menu.
Yeah.
Mackerel. I don't know what you think about that, quickly.
I think whoever that is a prick.
Okay, cool.
I'm joking. I'm sure they're not.
No,
I love mackerel. It's one for me, it's one of my favourite things. I think it's one of the best fish that we have in the UK. I think it's delicious. It's so versatile, you know, like whether it's cooked, whether it's cured, whether it's raw, whether you use it for this or that. I love it. I think it's, and it's got like a level of nostalgia obviously for me, but but no, I just think it's so delicious.
It's unbelievable. I agree.
Scallops though, a lot of people don't know how to cook them.
Yes, they don't.
Can you tell us now, what is the best way to cook? Because some say in a pan, but is that maybe... No.
Right.
Go on.
For me,
yeah.
The best way to cook a scallop... Well, let's break it down. So with a scallop, right, what you want is a nice, soft, like blushing kind of medium rare middle, and you don't want an overcooked outside.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people love the pan-fried bit. Sear. It does taste nice, but I think for me... that scallops are best, personally, if they're good, I think they're best raw, personally. Yep. But the way I always cook them is, and for anyone like who wants to cook scallops at home or finds it's hard in pan work, you know, pans, fucking around with pans in kitchens is a nightmare.
You can get overdone as well, quite
easily. It's so bollocks. The best way for me is to like, I always do it in a shell. So pop the scallop in the shell, put a big fucking layer of like compound butter over the top, a little bit of white wine in the bottom, and just bake it until it's like the butter starts to kind of take a little bit of caramelization. And you just feel it, and it just basically like poaches it.
Nice.
And
in like a hot oven.
Yeah, like 210, 200. Just let it cook that way. I think sometimes people just cook because they think that that's what it should be like, or the process of it looks cool. Like, I don't pan fry fish, really. Like, rarely.
Really?
There's a couple that I do it, like turbot on the bone, I love in a pan with loads of butter, and maybe something like a sea bass, like bring it up in a cup. But even a sea bass, I won't do it. Like, you know, there's this rule with fish that everyone goes, right, the way you cook fish in a pan, hot pan, skin side down, 95% turn over, take it out. Yeah, that's a blanket thing. That's like going, to me, that's like going, right, the best way to cook meat is in a pan, put it in a hot pan. Like, and that's so wrong, isn't it? Lamb, chicken, pork, beef, venison, everything cooks differently, and fish are exactly the same. There's such a dearth of diversity with different fish and the species. Like, I was trunching up a turbot the other day with the lads at work. Beautiful fish come in, just showing them, all the boys like had a bit of time, so just showing them all how to do it. And they were like, I was like, look, that's the fat. And they were like, what do you mean the fat? And I was like, well, fish has fat content. Like, it's like anything, it's an animal, you know what I mean? It's got a fat content. And that's why it's good, because it's got something to render into. If something's super, super lean, like, it's really hard to pan fry it nicely. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that. Especially with the thickness of a fish. If you're pan frying something lean, meat wise, like chicken, right? If you're going to pan fry a chicken breast, you want the skin on.
Yeah.
And you do it, you do it gently, you get it hot, and then you do it with loads of resting and take it gentle. Fish is super lean, so you don't want to do it that way. So yeah, for me, I'd often, more often than not with fish, I'll just put it in a tray with cold butter, some nice fish stock or a bit of dashi or something like that, and some wine, and just put it in the oven, and like, it's like a quick braise.
Yeah.
And it's fucking easy as well. It's easy to replicate it.
Well, don't give all your secrets away. Come on, you're reaching closer.
Come on, no, but
we don't eat enough fish, I think, in this country. People don't know how to cook it. People get scared of it.
They don't. And it's the sourcing as well.
Like, yeah.
It's when people are ignorant about the species, people are ignorant about the cooking, they don't know how to buy it well.
But it's walking into a supermarket and seeing fish like vacuum packed, you're often a bit like, oof, I don't know what to do with that, or do I trust that?
Yeah, but like, what the fuck, why are we selling things like, what is it, right, river something, and like bassa and why are we doing, look, I don't want to get all too political but like, one, this is one of the biggest things with me that really upset me about like Brexit and things was the way that fishermen were banded around, because I love fishermen, right? I know fishermen. It's the fishermen are why I have a career, right?
I couldn't
do it without those people. And the way it was banded around, like, oh yeah, look, it's going to help them. We're an island surrounded by water with the best seafood in the world. Like, all of that, yeah, it's true. But then it's like, right, so now we're going to, what, British people, like, mum of four who's only got X amount to spend on it, she's gonna walk into Tesco's and buy some fucking gurnard. Like, are you serious? It doesn't work.
No.
And then all the fish that people, or the majority of fish that people buy in the UK is imported, so all the prices of that goes up, and all the majority of the fish that the people in the UK catch is exported, and all the tax goes up on that. Basically they get fucked twice, and it's ridiculous. I mean, fishermen have it hard enough anyway. Like, if you're a fisherman, you have between the age of 16 and 60, you've got a 1 in 10 chance that you'll die at work, right? 1 in 10.
Whoa.
Like, do you know what I mean? It's the most dangerous peacetime job, apparently. So yeah, I just think things like that is so stupid. And people like that's, but that's not going to change. Like, people are always going to buy cod. They're always going to buy salmon. Yeah. Right? They're always going to be your top two. They're going to buy prawns, whatever, like seafood wise. There's things that just people, it's not going to change. People aren't going to start buying grey mullet and hake and even hake. You know what I mean? Like, the general public don't know what that is from a supermarket. From a restaurant, they might have it. You know what I mean?
It's time for you to do like a Jamie Oliver fish.
Isn't it? I need to.
Please.
Crusader.
You've obviously become a fish connoisseur. You're one of the greatest fish chefs in the world, I would say. And it's quite baffling, though, how you go from not liking food to becoming such an amazing Michelin star chef. What was the story there?
I don't know. I don't know. It's like my origin story thing.
Because you were cooking pizzas in a pub.
Well,
right?
What it was, I was a science nerd and I was bit by a radioactive fish. It was just, I worked in this pub and I'd never even like considered a chef as a job. It was.
So you were doing it to earn some money?
I worked there on a Sunday washing dishes and then I'd been going to college, like doing A-levels, didn't want to do them. My dad was like, if you're not going to do college, you have to have a job, right? Which is obviously great advice. So the chef at the place where I worked was like, we've got some hours if you want to do that for a minute. I was like, yeah, all right, I'll just do that. Like, and I just liked it. And here we are.
Yeah. At what point do you like connect with Nathan Outlaw?
I started working for Nathan in 2012. Obviously, like Cornwall is a small, it's got loads of good restaurants and some really, really good chefs, but it's very small and the places are small. So it's hard to like get into these places.
Yeah,
so
I
remember applying for a job with Nathan like ages before, like 2007 or something.
Oh,
like
really?
That. Yeah. And just like never heard anything back because the team was like four people. And I was like some nothing kid who worked in a pub an hour and a half away. So obviously they probably just didn't have a fucking job.
Yeah.
So that didn't come around. And then I was working at this place in Falmouth for a chef and he got the head chef job at the St. Q Inn that I said about. It was Paul Ripley, who was like the chef owner, but he didn't want to be in the kitchen as much anymore. So he was like, right, I'm going to hire a head chef. So I went up with this guy, didn't work out for him. He left. But I stayed. I was working with Paul. I worked with him at St. Q, and then we worked together back at Stein's at the place in Falmouth that I mentioned. That was sort of finishing up. So I said to Paul, like, could you have a word with Nathan and see if there's anything there? So then I went up to St. Enedoc and worked with him. And yeah, then from there, I went to the Capital. And, loved it. Loved going to work every day. Same with Geezer, actually. So at Ripley's, I'm very, very lucky that I've had jobs that I've just like loved with people that that really inspired me.
You say that though, didn't Paul Ripley have to fire one of your old head chefs who came with
that
you?
Was the guy, yeah. That who was the he? Guy. He's a guy called Damien, he was the head chef there.
But why was he apparently a massive bully?
He wasn't a very nice guy. Sorry if you're watching this, by the way, Damien.
Sorry, but, Damien.
You did it.
But what was it like in the kitchen? What was going on in the kitchen?
So what it was, I mean, he'd worked in places that were like, he always used to sort of have this sort of bully chef mentality of like, you've basically got to put up with being treated like shit until the point where you're grown enough to give everyone else shit. This kind of abusive mentality of like, yeah, like, you know, it was fucking horrible. Like, I remember it was like, when I worked for him in Falmouth, there was like one guy who was like, who was the chef and he was like scared of lobster. So he like tied a lobster to his apron and took the clips off it. And like, there was this time where we were filleting fish because the fish used to come in all prepped, like filleted. And one day they sent in this whole sea bass. He was like, right, I'll fillet. I was like, chef, do you mind if I like do it with you? Like, so I can learn. So filleting this fish, you know, he's teaching me how to do it. And I'm like fucking buzzing. I'm like, this is sick. You know, if you want to get people excited, like chefs, get them to fillet fish get them to handle like fresh seafood because it's the most amazing stuff. It's the most wild product that you get. You know, it comes from this unexplored, like the depths of the ocean.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's something that's really quite sort of alien to people. So filleting the fish and he was like, right, okay, like it's quite good on the bones. You've not left a lot of meat on, but like, look how scrappy all this is. We're going to have to cut it off. Let's get all the trim off. And he was like, right, okay. He was like, see all this trim, this is obviously waste. I was like, yeah, sorry, chef. He's like, no, it's fine. It's just, you know, you need to know. So he's like, right, you're going to wear this tonight. And I went, what? And he was like, so I had like these little like disposable chef's hats. And he was like, I'm going to tuck all the fish fillets all around the bottom of your hat and you're going to wear them. So you learn. And I was like, I've learned because you just told me. I'm not a fucking idiot.
Don't worry.
You know what I mean? Well, obviously didn't say
so
that.
So you had to do that?
yeah, he was like that. He was like, you do it or you go home. And like, I'd only worked at this like pub before. So to me, I was just like, this is how it is.
Sort of what happens. This is what
raw fish in your head all day.
Yeah, also. I mean, look, it's a fucking hygienic nightmare, number one. Like, it's awful. I was just in service, like, trying not to cry, man. I'm like, you know what I mean? But I didn't cry. But also, that toxic masculinity. But I was like, I thought the food was amazing, right? I thought it was unbelievable. So for me, I was like, you know, this is how it is. I'm being told by someone who knows more than me, this is what it's like, right? So if you're a kid and someone tells you don't need to brush your teeth, you ain't going to brush your teeth, are you? Because you don't think it's a thing. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like you learn this behavior. Anyway, we went up to St. Q, came in and he was like trying to use this sort of mindset that he knew. And, you know, to be fair to the guy, he's only doing what he's been told as well. Right. Like, his learned behavior. It's like from someone. But then he's trying to do it to the staff that they were just like laughing at him. They're like, fuck off, mate.
Yeah.
But then because I would take it, everything would then come at me. So I've got like, you know, there's five chefs in the kitchen. Yeah. So I'm getting times five of it. Oh. So I'm getting fucking, and they said to him, like, they pulled me aside one day, Paul and Sarah. And, you know, it's probably such a like, you know, serendipitous moment in my career. Like, it's like sliding doors moment. They're like, look, we're going to get rid of him because this isn't how it should be. This isn't okay. There's no one should be treated like this.
Yeah.
And they're like, we want you to stay, but obviously we know that you came together. Like, if your loyalty is with him, that's absolutely fine. But we think that there's more to doing this than this.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'd absolutely love to stay. So then he went, whatever. And I don't bear no grudges against him. Mm. And in a way, I'm glad it happened to an extent, because to have that, I'll never be like that. I'll never ever, you know, my whole thing now, especially as I've got older and like, you know, with Cornerstone, is like, you know, I want to ensure that you pass the baton in the right way.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, there was a lad from Cornerstone office. He was actually going to leave before we sort of announced that we were closing. And James and myself sort of spoke to him and said, he was an apprentice and he'd finished his apprenticeship. And we were like, right, you need to go from Cornerstone now because you've done it. You completed it. We're going to, what sort of stuff do you like? Where do you want? This is where we feel would be good for you to learn. And I think those things are so important. And to an extent, having that poor treatment has probably helped me to remember that. You know, I don't want anyone to feel like that. No one should have to. But Nathan was exactly the same. Paul's like, it's an amazing guy. And Nathan was exactly the same. I've never heard Nathan raise his voice once.
Really?
You know what I mean? In 12 years of knowing the guy, I've never heard him raise his voice. I've never seen him get angry. You know, the worst thing he would do is be like disappointed.
Yeah.
Like if you did something wrong, he'd like look and go,
yeah, and that gets
and
you.
I'm like trying not to cry, you know what I mean?
But talking nightmares, you were the consultant on Boiling Point, the film, with Stephen Graham.
Yeah, yeah.
Any other stories in that film come from your career? And what was it like just being involved with Stephen?
Well, they'd already written like the script as such for...
Let's bring you some food out. What do we have here, Ben?
Nice, what we got? Some ceviche, is it?
Yeah, it's a little, I nicked it off a New Zealand guy. They call it Kukunda.
Kukunda.
And it's basically, sea bream ceviche.
You have it on the chips, yeah?
With sea bream ceviche,
nice.
Lime juice, passion fruit, chili.
Oh, wow.
I think it's quite delicious.
Oh, yeah, I think...
The chilies have a bit of kick to them. I realised.
Mm. It's so nice. We just put a new one on Pearly, actually. It's kind of similar. It's like a watermelon one.
Oh, nice.
So it's like a watermelon kind of... broth,
yeah,
but with loads of scotch bonnet for it.
Yeah, nice. You want that heat?
Yeah, the heat, and then like a little bit of pickled melon and mint, like fresh mint.
Yeah, nice.
It's real nice.
In Fiji or New Zealand, he's a New Zealander, but I think he got it from Fiji. They like deep fry cassava root, instead of the crisps. Unbelievable.
Okay, couldn't get that around here. They could. Wow. And what's in that? Yeah, I mean, we're bringing out all the food now.
Yeah, I'm getting all the food. Sorry, I just done it.
Oh, whoa, what's that?
I'll tell you in a second. I've wrapped it in foil because I've run out of.
It looks bangy. You wrapped it very nicely.
An homage to my good friend, and maybe a friend of yours, Max Halley.
I can see
ham,
it.
Egg, and chips.
Yeah. Ham, egg, and chips. That is
the best. Sam. I haven't seen him in ages, but I love him. Like, it's, look at that.
Yeah, that is a beautiful cross section. Forget sensational sandwiches. That.
Yeah. Do you want to grab one?
Eternal. Can I take that one?
So yeah. Cheers. And there's obviously little cloths down there.
Nice.
Wow, these are.
Sorry, I know you're about to launch into answer, but I thought.
Yeah, it's fine. What was it? Oh, Boiling Point.
Yeah.
So yeah, so the script was there.
Mm.
Well, there wasn't a script, actually. It was all improvised.
Really?
Yeah, completely improvised. It was basically just, they had like a running order of like, this happens, that happens.
Right.
And it was a mad one because I'd never been involved in any TV that wasn't real life.
Yeah.
Mm. Do you know what I mean? So obviously I'd done like bits here and there with Great British Menu and Saturday Kitchen and Sunday Brunch, all the rest of it. But I never done anything that was like fictional. So I got offered the job and I was like, yeah, that sounds amazing. Like,
yeah.
And what it was basically, it was like they'd run it through as a play almost. So, because it's start to finish. So it's one, and it's in one shot. Sorry.
Yeah, right.
Like the single shot thing. Mm. So we did like rehearsals for a few days. And it was mad because obviously there's like Stephen Graham there, who's like an absolute legend, and all the other actors there who like I knew from various things as well. Like Vinette Robinson was amazing, and a few of the other guys I'd seen on things. You know, you're sitting next to the director, and basically like my role was went to sort of get the food ready that they would prep, and then show them how to sort of act like chefs. Sorry, I'm burping now.
Sort of looks legit.
Make it look legit. Like, for example, I remember, like, so I'm sitting there on the chair like that, like I'm fucking Stanley Kubrick or something, thinking I'm a big man. And they did a scene, and at the end of it, Steven's like, so is there anything on there that would be different in a normal kitchen? And I was like, well... I mean, like, you wouldn't really say station, you'd say section. Mm. And they're like that. I was like, work here is done, guys. It was mental as well, though, because, like, when we were filming it, was literally when they announced lockdown. Mm. So, like, we were supposed to do 4 nights of filming, because they do it like back to back. So I was working at Cornerstone at the time, so what I would do, and we weren't like as stocked up with staff as we were sort of post COVID. So I was very much like on the pass all the time. So I'd go to Cornerstone, do all the prep in the day, set them all up for dinner service, and then go there. It was in Dalston. So I'd go there, film it all night, go home, have an hour's sleep, come back and repeat it. And it was supposed to be for 4 nights. And I was fucked, man. Like, when they were filming, like because they'd film it back to back 3 times. So we'd finish at like 5 in the morning.
Jesus.
And I was like falling asleep for the like second and third one, because I was exhausted.
That allergy scene is still terrifying.
Yeah, it's mad.
Yeah.
Have you ever had anything like that in your kitchen? I mean, have you, like, what's the worst day you can remember in the kitchen?
Fuck.
And also, drug wise, is it still like as party as we like to think it is?
Why you
put in the professional kitchen? that's for dessert.
It is, but I think more than, I mean, look. Some chefs do take drugs, but I think
most, some office workers take drugs.
In London, often it's so. I think in London more than anywhere. But I honestly think that like the restaurant industry gets an unbelievably bad rap for what it is. It's seen in such a shit light. People just think it's this fucking like hellhole, and it's just. In my experience, it's just not like. Yeah, it can be a hard job, and yeah, it's stressful, and like it's long hours. But like, fuck me, I'd rather go to and work at a kitchen for 14 hours than work for 8 hours doing a job that I hate.
Yeah,
and come home and like just try and watch out which episode of fucking EastEnders I've not seen that week. Do you know what I mean? Like, honestly, for me, I think those things are so much worse. Like, it's an environment that is based around creativity more often than not. It's 100% focused on making people happy.
Yeah.
Right?
That's literally why you're there.
That's literally the only reason you're there. It's often like a young environment. So there's people in the same sort of boat as you. People like make so many good friends in the kitchen. You know, it's very easy like to finish work and have a drink and sometimes take that too far. And, you know, I don't know, in the past I've done that and people I know have done that, and it's, but I think that's true of any walk of life. I don't think it's a rife problem. I think sometimes things are like portrayed in such a way like that it's almost like detrimental, like you know, like even sometimes I think with like the various industry charities, I think almost like obviously they're pushing for the people that need help, but it kind of makes it look like everyone does, and I don't think that's the case at all. I really 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 don't.
No. Yeah. Agree.
But also, they like to jump on to like anything they can get their hands around.
Mm.
And the bigger the chef, like the more they want to kind of try and popularize stories and be, you know, quite mainstream about it. Anyway, that was boiling point.
Delicious,
this is banging ham, egg, and chips.
Really nice.
Not bad,
very
right?
good. Yeah. Really, really good. I think we should go to your go-to food section. So we're just going to sort of do a couple of quick fires to finish off. We need to get you back, Tom, for another one. You know, we do a meet and play, so maybe we can come and sit in the Pearly Queen and sample some of your dishes and do like
you're welcome to anytime.
There's a lot to still uncover. But let's start off with your go-to delivery order.
I love a good Turkish. Mm-hmm. Like there's Mangal 2, which is amazing. Mm. But Mangal 1 for me is the one. The mixed grill thing there. A load of tamarind salata, some grilled bread. That's amazing. There's a really good... Oh, House of Momo. Do you know House of Momo?
Got a shout out the other day.
Yeah, really good. Amazing dumplings, love that. There's a real nice Chinese... I can't remember what it's called, but there's a really nice Chinese by mine. I'd always get sweet and sour king prawns, prawn toast, satay prawns, and half a crispy duck. Mm. Quarter of a crispy duck.
Gorgeous.
Perfect. Gordo's pizza. I always chat with people about the pizza style that they like. Like I have this debate with Miles Kane, his really good mate of mine, and he calls it the crispy undercarriage. So he likes the New York style, you know. Mm. I want it soggy. I want it to be difficult to eat.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So I'm like the Neapolitan style like
that.
There's
too many crisps around at the moment.
No, thank you. I want it the soggy, and there's, so I'll go to Gordo's for the pizza for that. But they're probably my go-tos. Dang it.
Nice. I was going to ask your guilty pleasures, but maybe they're in there somewhere.
Hellman's mayo.
Yeah, right.
With everything?
Yeah.
Whatever. Everything? Mm-hmm. What's the worst thing you pair it with?
Do you mean it shouldn't be?
Yeah.
I don't know if there's like something that's necessarily the worst that I have it with, but like just the amount. Mm. So like if I'm dipping a chip in Hellman's, I want an equal ratio almost. You know what I mean? I want as much mayo as chip, basically.
Well, let's go to your locations. You go to weeknight restaurant. If you get a night away from the kitchen, and you can go for somewhere a bit more high restaurant than a takeaway, where are you going? Mm. But still relatively casual.
Just opposite Pearly Queen, there's Biang Biang noodles.
Mm.
Really good, like that proper Hong Kong style, like really nice. The De Beauvoir Arms, really nice, like good pub vibe.
What about for an absolute blowout?
I mean, I went to Ledbury not long, I know it's like the most top end one, but that was absolutely mind blowing. De Terra in Bethnal Green is absolutely unbelievable. Like it's one of the best places.
Good shout.
Oh, Dorian.
Yeah.
I'll probably go to Dorian out of all of those.
Really?
And probably, I mean, Dorian.
Is that magical? Yeah.
Honest to God, I went there and it was like, it was honestly the best meal that I'd had in ages, like the best lunch. It was so good. Like, it just ticks all of the boxes. Like, it's got such a huge amount of like skill and technical ability in the cookery, but just like so much good flavor and just amazing produce and like just chill. Like you go in, we went in, there was like a DJ playing, and then the guys are the level of hospitality in there. I mean, often chefs know when chefs are coming, sort of thing, so you get looked after. But one thing that I always do is like look around, and just everyone was basically getting the same the same treatment. I mean, we get an extra couple of extra courses, but we weren't getting bigger smiles than anyone.
No.
So that's amazing.
What about your go-to pub?
The Sun Tavern in Bethnal Green. Did it have to be with food, sorry?
No.
Bethnal Green, Sun Tavern. It's the best. Yeah, the Tav, it's the one. For food, the Marksman, probably up there. The Pelican in Notting Hill, if I'm that way. Do you know where's really good as well? Is it the Hero? Mm. The new one? It's fucking brilliant.
Is it?
Got to go check that out.
Yeah, we need to check that out.
These like little sticky lamb ribs are like unbelievable. Ooh, so yeah, give them a go, yeah.
And then final thing, dream long weekend getaway.
Do you know where is really good?
Go on.
For food like that. I did it when I went there. I've only been once. Was Ibiza, and
really,
I was there with James doing something, and like we had a night out. But the food, it was, I forget what it's called. Is it Jordao or something? There's one on the beach, and it was unbelievable. So yeah, there's loads of good restaurants there.
That's nice.
I'd love to go to Australia and check out Nyland Scaffs. You know,
the long weekend.
The long weekend. It's a very long weekend. Yeah. And I mean like San Sebastian and whatever. Yeah. I'm going. Do you know where I'm going soon for like a thing, like a lifestyle piece, like a pound shop Bourdain thing? Is Zurich. I'm going to Switzerland.
Really?
Yeah, the Swiss tourist board. I'm going out there. So basically, they're like, people don't know enough about Swiss food, and I was in this Zoom meeting talking to them. I was like, I don't know anything.
I have no idea.
Get me up.
But it sounds amazing. So really looking forward to that.
That's like, awesome.
I had one in Munich not long ago. I went over to watch the Arsenal. It's Bayern Munich away, and like the food was great in Munich.
Yeah,
well, I mean, it's
not
like
great
very
result,
heavy.
Good food.
No, totally. I mean,
Chef Tom Brown, you've been absolutely amazing. We're going to have to do round two, mise en place, in, of course, the amazing Pearly Queen. When you get Sunday brunch going as well. That sounds banging. But obviously, go check out that because it's just amazing. We are going to finish quickly with your go-to three-course meal.
2 dozen oysters.
Nice.
Fresh, beautiful, with, I know it's really against what I do, but like real classic mignonette, green Tabasco, always green Tabasco.
Yeah.
24 oysters. And then I would go, I'm going surf and turf. I'm going half a lobster grilled up in garlic butter and just like a Wagyu steak or something.
I'll give you a full lobster.
And loads of mayo. Yeah, I'll go full lobster. Fuck it, I can manage it. And then just a salad of literally just crisp lettuce. Nothing else. Yeah, nothing else.
No vinaigrette?
No vinaigrette. Just oil and a bit of mold and salt.
Perfect.
Loads of mayo, obviously. Yeah. And then dessert, I'm going for lemon tart. Just like really, really nice lemon tart with not creme fraiche, but just like nice, fresh, thick, like Jersey cream on the side.
Oh,
that's
Tom
me.
Brown.
That's me.
That's you, dumb.
You have been absolutely incredible.
Thank you.
Guys,
thanks for having me. I loved it.
So much for listening. We're going to do part two as a mise en place in the coming months. But until then, Tom, thanks so much for coming in. Good luck with everything.
My pleasure, man.
You're an absolute legend. And guys, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed that. Please leave us a great rating. And of course, we'll see you next week. Tom, what song do you want us to play you out with? Cornerstone by Arctic Monkeys? Does it have to be that?
It's got to be Cornerstone by the Arctic Monkeys, hasn't it?
Here we go. Let's Tom, go. Those are your go-tos. Thank you, mate.
Cheers.
Thanks, Tom.
I thought I saw you in the battleship, but it was only a lookalike. She was nothing but a vision trick. Under the warning light, she was close, close enough to be your ghost. But my chances turned to toast when I asked her if I could call her your name. I thought I saw you in a rusty hole, huddled up in a wicker chair. I wandered over for a closer look and kissed whoever was sitting there. She was close, and she held me very tightly, till I asked awfully politely, please, can I call you her name? And I elongated my lift home. Yeah, I let him go the long way round. I smelled your scent on the seatbelt.